children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Come, my children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep.
Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. And our show is brought to you by our sponsors, starlights.com. That's StarLights.com, where you will find lots of new age things, lots of fun stuff. So please do check that out. And also by alternativecancer.us, where you will find over 1,000 pages of information on how to deal with various issues of cancer. They include test kits that you can use if you know how to use muscle testing. You can either do it with one person or two people, depending on how proficient you are with that. And also, the enlightenedmedicinecenter.com. And we'll be adding more things on there. Biogeometry products are going to be coming soon. We'll be spiffing that site up. So please do check out the sponsors, and you might find some things you enjoy there. Now tonight, we're going to have a really exciting show, because Rosemary Ellen Guiley is the guest tonight. And if you have been looking at anything metaphysical for a while, you probably have heard of her, because she's a very prolific writer, and dealing with all kinds of things in the metaphysical, supernatural arena. And so I'm pretty excited to have her on. Welcome to the show, Rosemary.
Hi, Dr. Val. It's a pleasure to be on tonight.
Yeah, this is just something I have been looking forward to for quite some time. And we're going to talk about the djinn tonight. And listeners, if you have not heard of the djinn, you are going to be really surprised. And I have known of the djinn. However, I have to tell you, Rosemary, I was very surprised when I read your book, because it kind of lined a whole bunch of things up for me. And before I forget, let me mention that people can go to djinnuniverse.com and check out not only your books on the djinn, but my gosh, how many have you written? You're so prolific.
I've written over 50, and I'm somewhere between 50 and 60. I haven't counted them up lately, but yes, I've been doing this kind of work full-time now for 30 years. Writing, researching, interviewing lots of people. I've always been interested in the big picture, and that's one of the things that led me to the djinn. They're kind of an Oz behind the curtain of a lot of things going on in the paranormal realm, and in the djinn connection, which just came out this year, I draw a lot of those lines together, and I've been getting that kind of response from a lot of people. It's like, hey, you know, suddenly a lot of things are starting to make sense.
Yeah, and it's, well, in my own case, I mean, I started out with being abducted by the Greys when I was 3. And, you know, I had all kinds of stuff, you know, poltergeists and angels and archangels and demons. And, I mean, you know, you name it, I've seen it. So it was really a shock to go through there and go, oh, my God, they could have all been this one thing. Wow. So I really want to get into you know, identifying these things. And I know you've really gone into the history. It was quite fascinating to see how you've pulled all the different histories together. And I just had no idea. And I'm sure if I had no idea, there's plenty of people out there, this is going to be quite a shock too. And before we get into that, though, how did you get interested in all this stuff in the first place? I mean, I know you're extremely psychic and you know, I presume that you've had that since you were a little kid, but please do let us know how you got into this.
It was definitely childhood interests and experiences. There is psychic ability in my family. It's between my mother, my sister, and myself. Each of us has it in a different way. And I really didn't have any blowout experiences when I was a kid, at least that I know of. I have no memories of being abducted, but I did have psychic experiences, mostly fairy playmates and also angels who were around me. I was very much aware of the angels, and especially at night when I went to bed, because they would be very close and would often sing as I went to sleep. But I really didn't see dead people very much until I was much older, and I had unusual dreams. I didn't have precognitive dreams like my mother did, but I did teach myself at an early age in my teens how to astral travel in dreams and how to send and receive communications. And that convinced me of the otherworldly nature of dreaming, and dreams have always been important to me since then. So a lot of these things fed into other interests that I had with the occult, the paranormal, what's out there. I was very interested in astronomy. And for me, these invisible realms, they've always been real. There was never any doubt in my mind. So as I got older and became more curious about them, I was also curious why many people don't have these same kinds of experiences and why skeptical people could deny them altogether when in fact anyone who's had these experiences know they are real, they're genuine. We do have engagements with entities from other realms and other dimensions. So all of these things have propelled my interest in my work all these years. And, you know, like you, Dr. Val, I've had a lot of different kinds of experiences. Almost everything I've written about, angels, fairies, demons, the djinn, elementals, spirit guides, ascended masters, aliens. I still don't think I've been abducted, however. I don't have any experiences or memories along those lines.
Yeah, I would have rather had the angels and fairies, believe me. The whole abduction
scenario. Well, it's,
scenario,
you know, I know
terrifying.
People, and I've interviewed so many people who've been very traumatized by those experiences. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of this has been behind my work with the djinn, because years ago, almost a decade ago, I started, I didn't make the conscious decision to do it. It just sort of, I was just sort of guided and directed that way. And maybe by default, because other investigators don't like to take on heavy-duty cases. But I started getting involved in a lot of what I call persistent negative hauntings. And I was dealing with people who were very tormented, very stressed. Their lives were going to pieces. And in case after case, there were many situations that justified explanation in terms of what's going on here and how do we remedy the situation. Sometimes things could be remedied, sometimes they couldn't. But I noticed over a period of time that there was a pattern to the cases that resisted resolution. And that was one of the things that led me into a long process of very deep inquiries, checking things out and comparing things and making cross connections, and I finally wind up in djinn territory.
Yeah, and what are the djinn? Let's go into that, because I know a lot of people, when I say something about djinn, they go, what? Never heard of that. Unless, of course, they're from the Middle East, but yeah, let's go into...
And if you're from many parts of the world, including the Middle East, where most of the lore about djinn comes from, you know very well who they are and what they're up to. We know them as the genie in the bottle. That's really the primary way they made it into our culture. But they are a race of supernatural beings, like other entities that we deal with. They, according to their own lore, were here first on the planet, and they had dominion over the planet. In ancient Arabian legend, they were made out of the winds, and they ruled the planet, and according to some stories, got quite arrogant about it, and then lost out, were punished, and lost out to us as we came on the scene. They were absorbed into Islam, and they have a creation story there where there were angels, jinn, and people. That's it, just three entities. And they were told to bow down before human beings. God instructed the angels to bow down when he created Adam. And the jinn, who were among angels, had access to the heavenly realms, refused because they considered human beings to be inferior. And for that, then, they were cast out of this realm and lost their place to us.
So they're basically their
story really parallels fairies and a lot of other displaced entities that we have in our mythologies.
Mm-hmm. So are they then the fallen angels?
Well, they have similar characteristics. I don't consider them to be fallen angels. I consider them to have many parallels to fallen angels. In fact, I think some of the cases that we deal with in the West that we call demonic are probably jinn cases, because the jinn can act in ways that we ascribe to demons. So yes, there was a fall. There was a fall from grace, but it's not completely identical to what developed in Christian theology. The jinn have free will. They are self-directed. They live in their own realm, which in modern terms would be a parallel dimension. And some of them, not all of them, some of them, understandably, have a grudge against people. They feel they lost their original homeland, and they want it back. They don't like people. They want to harass and torment them. Some of them do become infatuated with us, and some of them act like human or jinn versions of human terrorists. You know, humans have good people, bad people, people in between. Well, the jinn do as well. So after studying the jinn as potential perpetrators of a lot of troubling and negative paranormal and spiritual experiences that people have, I came to the conclusion that the jinn are very heavily salted in these experiences. Whether or not they account for them all, if they're the sole perpetrator, I think remains to be determined. But as master shapeshifters, they can assume any guise, and since they really don't want us to know exactly what they're up to, it would suit their purpose very well to hide among other kinds of entities in a variety of experiences, and that includes ET abductions, mysterious creature encounters, possession cases, negative haunting cases, sexual assault at night by entities, and even beings who hang around and seem to do you favors, but then they interfere in your relationships as a result.
Yeah, that's so many of the things that you wrote about in the Jinn Connection. I was kind of like, wow. I mean, I had a lot of things happen to me when I was a teenager. And lots of poltergeist activity, and I mean, I could open doors by pointing at them and, you know, point at something and have it lift off a shelf and sail across the room at a measured pace and, you know, turn lights on and off without touching them and all this kind of stuff. And as I was reading the Jinn Connection, I was like, wow, I wonder if really what was working there was something like a jinn that was trying to bring me along to misuse these kinds of powers. And at one point, gosh, it wasn't until I was in my late 30s or 40s, and I was studying with Torkum Saradarian, and you know, just really went through a lot of shamanic work and things like that. And all of a sudden, I had something that was kind of coming out of the air and basically said to me, "You're dead to the kingdom of the air." And I went, "What? What exactly does that mean?" And I asked Torkum, and he said, "I don't know." He said, "I haven't heard that before. I think maybe it's just, you know, that you're dead to the kingdom of error." And I said, "Yeah, I don't think so. It was very distinct, air." And so I was reading through your book and realizing that the kingdom of the air being the jinn, that somehow I had at least, you know, gotten out of that particular connection, hopefully. I mean, I still have a lot of strange things happen to me, but nothing like, you know, was happening before. And so it sparked a whole lot of questions in me, and I'm sure there's lots of other people that have questions too, because, you know, so many people, some of us just seem to be picked out since childhood, and we're just harassed continuously. And it's like, you know, no matter what you do, you know, weird stuff happens. And I mean, I kind of get to the point where I go, Yeah, so my life would be different. How? You know, oh, this happened. Oh, yeah, big deal. You know, it's not going to stop me. I'm going to keep on plodding on. And so I just really got a lot of insights from your book, and just I was amazed, totally amazed. And I'm just wondering, is there some way that we can prevent this kind of stuff from bothering us? Because it seems to me like it's getting heavier and heavier. I'm watching more and more people go completely crazy. And, I mean, you know, you just kind of look at them and go, okay, that's not a physical thing. You know, as a doctor, you know, I have to test them for the physical things. But, I mean, people are really going nuts, Rosemary. I'm just kind of going, wow, this is more than physical stuff. You know, something's happening to these people. And 9 times out of 10, they tell me something's happening to them at night.
That's often when it happens, because we are more vulnerable then. And, in fact, this whole line of inquiry with the jinn really got seriously underway when I started looking at shadow people. And these are dark entities who almost always are bedroom visitors at night. They do lurk about haunted locations. I've seen them many times in those kinds of places. They can be seen during the day. But chiefly, they come and invade people's bedrooms. Sometimes they assault people, either physically or sexually. They look like tall men wearing coats and hats, and they radiate a lot of very dark, malevolent energy. This is what frightens people. They can't see any features. There's rarely any communication. And some people get repeat visits, and some people just in certain places or when they're going through trouble. And then we have this other class of experiencer that you just touched on, including yourself, lifelong experiencers who seem to have a continuing stream of engagements with entities and other realms. So, yes, these increases are on the rise, and I think that's accountable in several ways. One is I really do think that the barriers between dimensions are thinning out some, and that's due to changes in our consciousness. It may also be impacted by technology. The entire global internet, electronic media that we're saturated with, cell phones, computers, televisions, you know, EMF, everywhere we turn, could be impacting these boundaries between dimensions. We have changes in consciousness, too, where many people are interested in exploring these realms, sometimes without adequate preparation beforehand. And we have, unfortunately, in Western media, an emphasis on let's all be scared and full of fear. So all of these things are presented in ways to terrify people, but at the same time, it's like the moth to flame. It's so scary, people want to have the experiences. So these are all contributing to these openings between dimensions. One of the things that I found in these cases that I followed, and some of them for years, the persistent negative hauntings and also abduction cases, is that there are a lot of remedies that work, but I haven't yet found a remedy that works all the time in all the cases for everybody. And many of the remedies that work may not work all the time either. They may be sporadic in their effectiveness, or they might be effective for a while and then stop being effective. So we're in the very early learning stages of what's going on and what do we do about it, because things are not what we have thought them to be. Let's take the ET abduction scenario, for example. It's not just the little gray guys coming and taking people away to ships for examination, with a few other entities thrown in, like reptilians and praying mantises and the good guys, the Nordics and whatnot. This is a very complex phenomenon, and I do believe the jinn are heavily involved in it, and none of it points to anything good for human beings. And we need to broaden the scope of our inquiry into what's going on. I've found the presence of the djinn in the abduction literature going back for decades through the presence of shadow people. Shadow people are a very distinct form, and they do occur in abduction cases, usually not along with the greys, but in advance of the greys or in between abductions. So
yeah,
we need to be asking different questions about what's going on and experimenting with as many remedies as we can from folklore, from religion, from personal spirituality. There are a lot of things that address the superficial nature of the phenomena. You know, they'll treat the surface of things. But to get really deep down inside of where do we find our best defenses, I think we're going to have to look within. And this also has been addressed in the abduction phenomenon in years past by experiencers and researchers who have probed the individual's ability to summon up some kind of will-directed spiritual force, which involves a connection to the higher planes that creates more of a buffer around people. Some of these people who are being greatly affected don't seem to have very good shields against this kind of activity. And then we have the cases where people and entire families have been identified and interacted with for generations. And even if they have good barriers around them, there's something else going on.
Yeah, see, I think that
that's kind of the long, rambly answer to your question. The upshot is we have more questions than answers. There are lots of remedies that work. People have to experiment with them until they find something that really clicks for them.
Yeah, I think in my case it was probably both branches of the family, because both grandmothers were extremely psychic and were able to predict world events and, you know, all kinds of tragic things happened on both sides of the family. So it could have been generational in my case, and I decided the buck stops here, you know, and actively started working against that kind of stuff. And I've had a pretty good measure of success with that. They can come towards me, but they can't affect me personally, but they can affect people around me. And so, you know, I've noticed that going on for a long time. And, before I go into something else, Don or Seth, do we have a caller waiting? I don't have internet, so I can't really tell. You know, I'm on the road, and, you know, I'm stuck with just the phone for now. Okay, thank you. Just let me know if we do. Anyway, Rosemary, one of the things that I noticed about shadow people, and I have two things that I'm thinking about. One is some of these shows, you know, the paranormal shows, they've actually caught something lifting objects up, heavy objects, and hurling them across the room. Now, they don't seem to throw these objects at the people. It's more like to scare them away. And, you know, I've seen some pretty crazy stuff that they've actually captured on tape, or I'm showing my age, on the digital film. And I've had things, you know, in my own house where I have seen shadows and things, but at one point I remember I was dozing in my bedroom, had the lights on and the window slightly open, and I had fallen asleep. And all of a sudden, something had a hold of me, and it was behind me, and I couldn't even twitch a muscle. And I had that instant of terror, and then I thought, well, I can't move. And that's kind of odd, because normally you could at least twitch a few muscles, you know. And I thought, that's kind of weird, so it's obviously not human. And then I thought, well, you know, if this is the way I'm going to die, okay, so be it. You know, I have no fear of death. And as I laid there, I could feel a lessening of this hold that this thing had on me. And then I got amused, and I started to laugh, and I started to try to move against it to see what the shape was. And it was like, ew! And it took off. And so I was laughing, and I thought, oh, this must be what they call the eaters. You know, the ones that come in the middle of the night and they try to make you terrified because they actually eat that negative emotion of fear. And so I'm just wondering, are those what the shadow people are really up to? Or is that just, you know, some coincidental thing? I mean, I'm not really sure, but it was interesting to see the difference.
That's one of the things that they're up to. I think the jinn are complex in their motives and intentions just like we are. They're not uniform by any means. And a single entity could have multiple things going on behind its interactions with people. But the fear thing is quite prominent in those experiences, and many people have had the feeling that the entity is indeed feeding off the fear. I believe that very strongly to be the case. They want you to be frightened, and as soon as you are frightened, they have the advantage. All of the researchers that I have spoken to all over the earth about the jinn have all emphasized the same thing. When dealing with them, you have to not be afraid because you are immediately at a significant disadvantage. And, of course, we have so many circumstances where people are suddenly confronted by something, so they're caught off guard, or they simply are overwhelmed by the negativity of it, and they don't know what to do. So all of these things work at their disadvantage. When they come at night, I think that depending on who they are, and they do seem to have different objectives, they have different abilities and powers, they may be observing us. It may be for a purpose to observe and get some kind of information that's useful to another plan. They may be preparing the way for an abduction experience. They may be sizing somebody up to see if they could be approached in some other way. So there could be a lot of things going on in each particular case.
Well, I can tell you, I haven't seen any grays since I was out of my body. Oh, this was many years ago. And I was out of my body astral traveling, and I came back to find a hybrid gray standing in my room. And I turned around and growled at this thing, and it was like I was shooting light out of my eyes. And I basically told it to get out, and it was making these placating gestures like, oh, don't kill me, you know, I'm okay. And I was like, get out. And then it kind of wavered and disappeared, but I could still see the, like, heat displacement waves. And I said, I can still see you. Get out. And that was the last of that one. So I thought, now that's kind of interesting. And then I jumped back into my body and went, huh. And I could still see those little waves. So I actually got out of bed at that point, turned and faced it, and still told it to get out. And then it disappeared. But it was kind of strange because, you know, living in Sedona, we have a lot of strange things going on. And, you know, the people who were born and raised there will tell you that they used to go meet ETs. And if they wanted to meet them, they would be given the latitude and the longitude, and it'd be like in chalk, some kind of chalk-like material on the side of the road, and they would just go to those directions, and they would actually physically meet with these beings. So, you know, at that point, I've known quite a few people who grew up in Sedona, and I always thought, you know, that makes me a little bit uneasy, because for a long time I have thought, no, the Space Brothers are not coming to rescue us. You know, we have to rescue ourselves from whatever's going on. And I have found that as time goes on, I have less and less trust in these supposed, you know, savior beings. I just don't feel good about it. And I don't know, you know, from my own aspect, I couldn't tell you if there are good ones out there that would actually come and help at some point. But my feeling about it so far has been that, no, I don't think so. Something doesn't feel right. So these could be jinn, huh?
They very well could be. And I haven't been able to arrive at a point in my own research where I conclude that they're all jinn. You know, it's us, the angels, and jinn, and that's it. But I do believe that the jinn are heavily involved in our entity contact experiences of all kinds. And to what extent, we don't really know. It may be more in some areas and less in other areas, but they are definitely interacting with human beings and have been doing so for a very long time. Most of it is not in our best interest. I have not seen really any significant cases where people have been aided and benefited. Now, I have talked to individuals who've either witnessed or learned the sorcery of summoning jinn for and other kinds of entities, and say they've been aided. But these sorts of things always come with a price. It's not benevolent entities just trying to help out humanity. It's a deal. It's I'll do you a favor and then you will do me one. And the jinn are very good bargainers that way. Ultimately, the price that people pay is not a happy one for this kind of arrangement. And I always urge people to think twice before they pursue these kinds of activities. I do not condone them. I don't recommend them. And I don't tell people where to go to get that information because they'll wind up with more problems than ever. But I agree with you, Dr. Val, that a lot of these things going on out there are working against humanity. And it's a lot of it's being done very covertly, very stealthily, sometimes with our tacit involvement and approval because we're under the illusion that it's something else. Or we just simply don't know, or we'd rather not think about it and hope that it'll all go away, which is an attitude that a lot of people seem to have. How long this is going to continue to play out, nobody really knows. Some of the questions that are asked about these kinds of repeating occurrences, like abductions and the bedroom visitations, is how many times do these entities have to do this? This can't be real because they wouldn't need to come back endlessly and endlessly and endlessly and do the same things. We have to keep in mind that these beings are not operating on anything close to a human time scale. Even in the jinn lore, it's said that they live for thousands of years, in which case a human lifetime is nothing to them. So we have to really readjust our thinking in terms of what's going on. I do believe in helpful entities. I don't think that we're being visited by cosmic do-gooders who find us to be a charity case and they're coming around to hand out, you know, some benefits. But I do believe that there are helpful entities, angels among them, who will respond to requests for help and aid.
Sure. Yeah, I totally believe in the angels, mainly because I've had, you know, contact throughout my life as well as with the other guys, and I've had many miraculous things happen, and for that I'm quite grateful. And you know, I've given more thought lately, especially since reading your book about the jinn. I've given more thought to, you know, what all these little mysteries are, because you know, having had so many weird things happen in my life, it seems like when people start celebrating the fact that they have some phenomena happening, it seems like they have no filters. You know, and they have no idea that they need to protect themselves. And, you know, being in Sedona, I mean, that's a place where Robert Shields was overheard one day saying that if one more channel moved to Sedona, we'd have to get cable. Now, that was years ago, and there's, probably at least 1,000 of them there now, and I know darn well they're not channeling who they think they are. And, I mean, you can tell it in a hot second. And, my years ago, I used to say, well, they're either possessed or they're channeling their own ego, because it's certainly not something coming from a higher consciousness. And plus, if somebody's really channeling a higher consciousness, they glow with an unearthly light, and you don't get that with most of these people. So, I've seen a lot of disasters happen because the people start to believe it, that at first they get like 95% truth and 5% lies, and after they're hooked, it goes down to, maybe 10% truth and the rest of it's lies, but by then it's too late. And so I've seen this kind of stuff going on, and I've seen people's lives be destroyed, and I've often wondered, what the heck is actually going on? So this whole thing with the djinn is making a lot more sense to me, and that brings me to another question. Do you think that these black-eyed children that people are seeing might actually be part of what all of this is about, that they're actually doing a hybrid program with humans, and the black-eyed children are actually djinn hybrids?
My feeling on the black-eyed children and black-eyed adults, too, because people have been reporting them now as well, is that they are a form taken by djinn. I haven't considered them to be hybrids. It would certainly be possible because the djinn have created hybrids with human beings for many, many centuries. But as shapeshifters, they do take forms, and they a pattern that they have is that they vary their forms considerably, and I think one reason is to keep people distracted. We tend to think we have all these different kinds of entities, and they're all discrete and separate from each other. And so we're dealing with this here and this there and yet something else over here, when actually they could just be different forms of the same thing, that there is an Oz behind the curtain. So one of the newest wrinkles in the negative entity contact scenario phenomena happens to be these black-eyed children. And I think it's just yet another form to keep people puzzled and distracted and also fearful. As soon as we think we have one thing figured out, they're going to jump into something else. And I very much appreciated the work of David Weatherly, who lives in Prescott, with his book Black-Eyed Children. And he does consider the djinn as one of their explanations. And, like me, David takes this big picture approach and cross-cultural, connections and whatnot. We find the roots going back to other kinds of scenarios in the past. They all share common traits. So could it be that there's really one explanation behind a lot of variations? That's what I think is going on with the black-eyed children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. It seems like this never-ending onslaught, and I think it's getting easier for them now since the veils are thinning. And I know when people ask me, I just tell them, don't fool around with that stuff. We're not meant to fool around with these things. Because, how do you expect to be able to deal with something that's thousands of years old and tricky and manipulative and everything and well-practiced at it when, we have such a limited lifespan in these bodies and limited intelligence? And, having seen some of these things myself, I mean, I know that the veil's ever thin so much that they become much easier to see. It's going to horrify most of the populace in the world, because they think these things don't exist, And as somebody who's seen all kinds of weird things since I was a little kid, I know darn well they exist. And, there's more and more of us that are going, hey, this stuff is real. And yet there's that whole population out there that thinks that this stuff is all a bunch of hoo-ha and, we're all crazy and, that's the way they want to believe it. And I just kind of I shake my head, and I think, wow, I know people can die from fright. I've seen it. You know, I used to be an ER nurse, and I'll tell you, I've actually seen that happen. And sometimes you can bring them back from that, and sometimes you can't. But it's pretty scary stuff. And when you consider that there's more and more things on TV now, on all these paranormal ghost hunting type programs where they've got more and more evidence that they can show you of things happening, including glowing red eyes, you know, and fireballs and stuff. It's like, whoa, you know, and this is, you know, unretouched footage of things going on and things being thrown from an invisible hand and things like that. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, you know, these poor people, first of all, that are going through these things. But, you know, we don't want more of that kind of stuff happening. And I think with all the fear that's being pumped into people, you know, really our only defense is to face these things courageously and refuse to be afraid, you know, and just realize, well, if you die, you know, then it's over and you don't have to worry about it anymore. You know, you don't have to die these 1,000 deaths, you know, per day by all these weird things happening. And so my own kind of remedy to this has been to go face it head on. And, you know, I had a house there in Sedona where I had a portal that was open, and it was right kind of almost in the middle of the house, but down this long hallway, and there were thousands of these things that would pour out and during the dark of the moon. And I would see these things, and I would go, hey, this is my house. You can't be coming through here. And I would go stand in the doorway like a big X and just beam love out at them and laugh at them, and they would disappear. So I just kind of went, if anybody saw me cackling here in the middle of my hallway, they would want to cart me away, you know. And I had so many people that came in and tried to close that portal, and they couldn't close it, and finally I had to take matters into my own hands. And it took me a while. It took me several months, because it would only pop open, you know, for a day or two during the dark of the moon. And I thought, wow, this is like, I don't know what happened there. I don't know why that portal was open. But it was really irritating because it woke me up from a sound sleep too many times. I don't like my sleep to be disturbed. But I'm sure that if I had been afraid of it, it would have probably been a lot worse. And, you know, just refusing to go into that fear state, I think, is probably our best defense at this point. And other than that, you know, having that angelic cotillion around you is, you know, probably your ultimate best defense.
You were very fortunate to be able to close it down, because a lot of these portals don't close. They've probably been on the planet from the get-go, and they may even be magnified and manipulated by beings from the other dimensions. There are land configuration patterns to some of them where I believe the content of the soil and the contours of the land help to create that opening. And then we have these land-based entities who can come and go. They're literally anchored into the land. And it doesn't matter whether you put a new house up or not. You know, people think it has to be old to be on it. It doesn't. It could be brand new if it's sitting on the wrong piece of property. But our consciousness can open portals. Anytime we engage in paranormal activity and ask for communication, that opens up usually a temporary portal. Sometimes people will have attachment problems afterwards, and I think a lot of it just depends on a whole configuration of circumstances, including their own consciousness, their own barriers, the attitudes they bring to the experiences. And as you said earlier, there is a lot of masquerading going on, to the point where we have to ask, how reliable are spirit communications? I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I don't want to say, hey, you know, they're too untrustworthy, so we can't trust anything. But people do have to recognize that there is a lot of deceit and masquerade, and sometimes you may not know it for a while. It's not until that truth dwindles way, way down in the overall message load. And as you mentioned, by then a lot of people are hooked, and they're not going to see it anyway.
Yeah, and I traveled around for a couple of years with some of Dr. Fred Bell's equipment. He called them Andromedan holographic projectors. And I took them across the U.S. and did these group vortex, we call them quantum vortex gatherings. And one of my biggest things was that I had to protect that space before I opened that portal. And so I would call in the archangels and, you know, make sure that the space was protected from demonic things entering. And that was all based on some things I experienced when I first put them up and had them in the right angles and positions and, you know, hit them with laser light and everything else. I actually had somebody that came in and called in the entire negative side of creation into my room of healing and enlightenment. And it was pretty weird. You know, I had 8 lasers in there, kind of would normally look like Christmas because I was focusing them on these little jewels that were in the projectors, and it would just break up the light, you know, so there'd be thousands of red and green lights around. And after this person did this, I walked past the room, and something reached out of the room and slapped me right in the top 3 chakras, and I went, whoa! What the hell was that? And I looked in the room, and it was dark. You couldn't even see the lasers. And I was like, wow. And it took me a while to close down that one, you know, and kick all those things out. And, well, I didn't do it. I called in the big guns, you know. I called in the archangels and Lord Yeshua the Christos, and, you know, I let them handle it. I'm not going to stick my nose in there, you know, and so that took care of it. But it was pretty strange. You know, first of all, someone would think that you could do that, and, you know, well, his whole reason for doing that was he was going to kill all the negative side of creation. And when I found this out, I flipped. I was so upset. Because then he left and, you know, left me with the mess. And it was quite a learning experience, though, because then I realized that every place that I went, I was going to have to protect that portal opening. And I have some strange pictures. You know, I have pictures of what one of my occult physicist friends called elementals. Then I have pictures of a hybrid gray and reptilian and, you know, different faces and, you know, strange things that you just kind of go, okay, how did that happen? And the one thing that I took away from that is however you're going to open a portal, whether it's meditating with crystals, using the Ouija board, using a, you know, quantum physics equipment, however you're going to do it, you damn well better protect that space because these things can get through very, very easily. And the other thing I noticed, too, is that whenever someone would go in there and call for power or for money, that's what really jammed that portal open, and they poured through at that point. It was scary.
Well, entities are very good at sizing people up, and the vibration of our thoughts and intentions go out into the astral and spiritual planes, and other entities can read those. So when people are oriented toward the lower level stuff, like manipulation, power, wealth, wanting to, you know, take advantage of people, those sorts of things, entities will respond to those intentions. And if they can find a way to have access to individuals like that, they will encourage those inclinations and in some cases may even boldly have a direct relationship with those individuals.
Yeah, it was something I hadn't planned on. You know, I kind of thought that people would be smart enough to realize that the whole point of entering the zero-point field is really about, you know, higher connection and getting that connection to the source of all life rather than, you know, doing something as mundane as calling out for money and power. And so I had to do a lot of instruction with people and try to explain to them not to do that. Of course, some of them would still do it. And the consequences were pretty quick and pretty impressive in some cases. And Okay. Hi, Carla. Welcome to the show. You have a question for Rosemary?
Yes. I have a question for both of you guys,
okay.
And I'll make it quick. You guys were talking about opening up portals. I have a pyramid bed from Dr. Bell. And by having that piece of equipment, am I opening up a portal? And if I am, what should I do to protect myself?
Go ahead, Rosemary. What do you think?
Okay. Anytime we engage with the spiritual planes, yes, it does open up a portal in consciousness, in the energetic space around us. You have to consider what it is you're doing and the intention you're putting behind it and the kind of energy that you're aligning with. And some of those are going to have their own natural protections to them. I wouldn't consider a pyramid bed being problematic unless I was also engaging with low-level entities for selfish purposes. I think you have to measure the results and, you know, see what you're getting as a result of that. Is it taking you where you want to go? And is anything, you know, possibly sneaking in on the sides? And if it is, then you have to alter your course of action. But if it's not, if it's working for you, I don't see any reason why you couldn't continue on with that.
Okay. See, my outcome for getting that was for healing. Dr. Valerie and those guys have introduced me to Fred Bell stuff. And Dr. Valerie knows my situations and that. But again, mine's just for healing, and you know, I'd like to manifest good stuff in my life. But I just recently got it, But you mentioned something, and I thought, geez, I got to call up and find out if just by having that, is that opening up a portal, though?
Well, it's opening up an engagement with higher spiritual awarenesses, presences, streams of energy. So, yes, that is a kind of portal. But we do that in meditation and prayer, too. All of our engagements with other realms take place because we open up a portal, a line of communication, a line of access, and it's a two-way street. I've always recommended one of the best defenses being daily meditation, and prayer too, of course, but daily meditation because it's like working out in your aura gym. It strengthens the aura. It builds up a buffer around you. It strengthens and aligns your connection to your spiritual center and to the spiritual aids and higher planes around you. However you define the divine, it's going to strengthen that. And that's one of the best things you can do. I don't think that we should be in positions where we're afraid to undertake anything, even for healing and enlightenment purposes, because there might be something negative lurking around the corner. And in fact, in esoteric philosophy and in occult teachings, as soon as you step onto the path with any kind of intention, you're going to attract the attention of all kinds of beings. Good and bad and a lot in between, and you're going to have engagements with them. You're never going to get away from that. In fact, the deeper you go and the better you get at things, you probably will have some encounters with negative entities that would like to try and do something about that. But if you're well prepared and studied and trained, you can handle that. So it's not, we can't skew the picture all one way. It's not a black and white picture. There's a lot of gray in between, and we simply have to deal with it. If we're going to advance our enlightenment and our spiritual strength in any significant way.
Exactly, and it is a learning thing. And I think that we're going to have another conversation on all this stuff because our time is up. thank you for calling, Carla. And Rosemary, could you get out your websites, contact information,
thank
anything you.
You
would like people to have?
VisionaryLiving.com is the main website, and I do have a monthly newsletter that's complimentary. You can sign up for it there. I have lots of articles on the website. If you're interested in the GIN, I have an educational site called GINUniverse.com, D-J-I-N-N, Universe. People have posted their stories and comments from all over the world, a very eye-opening website in terms of the surprises that people have encountered when they have had dealings with the GIN.
Yeah, it's a wonderful website, so I'm hoping people will take your advice and smarten themselves up. Yeah. It's been a great pleasure having you on, Rosemary. Thank you so much, and I really would love to have you on the show more and help people to start to get a better handle on how to deal with all this stuff. So thank
well,
you again.
I would like that, Dr. Val, and my apologies for my voice every now and then. I find that very odd things happen to me when I start talking about the GIN. Sometimes my voice will be affected.
Oh, we're out of time. We're
we'll
out of time,
later.
Rosemary. I'm sorry. Thank you so much. We've been talking with Rosemary Ellen Guiley.